Welcome to the Drummer Podcast from the Ruffed Grouse Society, in association with the American Woodcock Society. Now your host.
I'm Matt Soberg, RGS Director of Communications, and on the show today, Gary Zimmer, the RGS Coordinating Biologist, and he's also the biologist who covers the Western Great Lakes region. Welcome, Gary.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for your time today. I appreciate it. The focus today is going to be RGS habitat. We're going to talk a little bit about Gary himself, you know, his role for RGS, what he does, the role of what an RGS biologist does in general. We're going to talk a little bit about RGS habitat programs and projects. And if I'm lucky, I'll get Gary to disclose his secret Wisconsin grouse hunting covers. How's that sound, Gary?
Good, all except the last one.
Okay. We'll see if that comes up. All right. For those who don't know Gary, can you give me a little bit of a background about yourself?
If we go back far enough, it's pretty ancient history, but I've been working in the wildlife field for 35 years after graduating with a bachelor and master's degree in wildlife management and natural resources management from the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. Since then, I've worked in waterfowl research for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources for a few years just out of college, and then I worked for 18 years with the U.S. Forest Service, most of that time as a district wildlife biologist, and back in December of 2000, sought the job for regional biologist in the Western Great Lakes region for the Ruffed Grouse Society. So I've been here 14 years with the Ruffed Grouse Society, so have a few years behind me of experience in the wildlife management field.
And if I can, I kind of want to go back to when you started. What about being involved with the Ruffed Grouse Society, from your perspective, was a good thing for you?
Back in the years I worked with the U.S. Forest Service, I was working closely with the Ruffed Grouse Society, and back then Dan Desiker, who was still with the Society, but was pretty much the only biologist with the Society. So the Society at the time started the Partners in Conservation program, and the Board of Directors decided to expand from one biologist to several regional biologists. And that opportunity of myself having experience working with the volunteers of the Ruffed Grouse Society and Dan as a biologist really kicked me off of the interest. I've always had the desire to work with Ruffed Grouse and Woodcock, and been a longtime hunter myself, and that just appealed to me, and the challenges and opportunities that Ruffed Grouse and Woodcock management deal with really was exciting for myself, and helped me make that transition from a federal. We have a pretty wide range of duties, and I probably can sum them up in maybe four different areas. That's not all we do, but four different areas that we really owe agency to a nonprofit organization.
Now, on its face, being an RGS biologist, folks might think it only involves, you know, creating habitat for grouse and woodcock, but RGS biologists do a lot of other things too. Could you just maybe explain for folks that don't know just what it means to be an RGS biologist and what your main roles are?
Emphasize one, and you've already kind of mentioned it a little bit, Matt, is public land management is a big key of our operations. We do a lot of work with public land managers, U.S. Forest Service, state agencies, county, if there are county land managers in some states, to promote grouse and woodcock habitat. That's a big part of our efforts, big part of what we do. But we also do quite a bit of work on private lands. A lot of that is informing and training and even going out on site to private lands and working with private landowners to improve habitat for the birds. Private lands are very important in the eastern part of the United States. The private lands are own about 50 to 65% of the forested lands in the eastern part of the United States. It varies by state, obviously, but that's quite a big base of potential habitat out there for the birds. A big piece of our job is education, and I'd almost say education and advocacy. We are the ones carrying the torch about the importance of young forest habitat for the species that we're very interested in, and many other species out there. And we have to educate folks, and that includes folks at all levels, the individual private landowner, like I mentioned before, as well as the agency folks that we deal with, and even at times the legislators who make decisions and statutes and laws that we want to be a part of, so they're aware of some of the implications of these different laws. Another piece that we do, probably our fourth, if I can say four things that we emphasize, would be chapter involvement. And we work closely with our volunteer chapters to put on events or activities. A lot of what we do is working with them on habitat work days, seminars, wildlife seminars, and other types of activities that the chapters work with us on to improve habitat or improve awareness for our mission. And all four things are very important. And we have a lot of smaller things that we also do, but those are, I guess I would sum up as the four primary objectives and roles of our biologists.
In the realm of communications, I like to say on behalf of RGS that RGS is the leader in forest management. And that's because we are proud of our well-respected biologists and what they do. You're the coordinating biologist. Can you give me a rundown on your role as the coordinating biologist, and then also maybe just touch base briefly on some of the other biologists we have on staff and their regions?
Sure. As coordinating biologist, I supervise the regional biologist for the society and work with an extra biologist, I might say. In Minnesota, we have an agreement where we pay a portion of the salary of a forest game bird coordinator, and then that position was recently filled by Mike North of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. I am not Mike's supervisor. We work real closely on the management activities in Minnesota for grouse and rough grouse and woodcock, and relate to, especially to projects that could go on that Rough Grouse Society and the local chapters in particular are very interested in cooperating with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources and Mike in that position. We have three other biologists currently besides myself that are regional biologists, and my role is to coordinate our activities. Each one, though, this is a very difficult challenge for all of us. Each one of us is in a different area and has almost different missions in each one of our areas. While we all are under the umbrella of improving rough grouse and woodcock habitat, we have to do it in a different way, and we have to be flexible and adaptable, and each of the biologists has different things that they do. To give you an example, Dr. Linda Ordaway is our Mid-Atlantic and Southern Appalachia biologist, covers pretty much Pennsylvania and areas south and east from Pennsylvania, and deals a lot with some of the ongoing timber management programs that the society is involved with several different companies who really aren't in the forest land management business, but do own forest land. And we work closely to make sure that they are doing sound work on those properties and improving habitats for a lot of the species that we're interested in. Andy Weick is out in the New England state, New York and New England states, but also covers a lot of our woodcock efforts that are picking up steam in the southern part of the country. Andy specializes in woodcock habitat, having spent much of his life really working in the woodcock field. So he's the person that really takes that charge and works with woodcock in particular, but also with the needs and interest in those New England states. Another position we have was recently vacated with the retirement of Dr. Larry Visser, and he was covering Michigan, Ohio, and Indiana, which we call the Eastern Great Lakes region, for the society, and was working in those states. Very similar to how I work here in Wisconsin, a little bit in the UP of Michigan, and Illinois, Iowa, and Missouri. So we're covering quite a bit of area with a great staff that has, every day is a different challenge and opportunity for the biologist and for the society. And we're always seeing different new and developing things go on, and we're pretty excited about a lot of those efforts that we're a part of.
The biologists are communicating with landowners or agencies, and through the communications that we do from headquarters here too, we talk about some science-based terms and buzzwords and things like that. And I thought maybe we could just go through a few of them just to help folks understand a little bit more about specifically what we're talking about. When RGS talks about scientific forest management, I know that's something that's very important to us. From your perspective, what does that mean?
It's basically looking at past history and past research and seeing what works and what doesn't work and how it best benefits the forested habitat and the species, the wildlife species that utilize that habitat. And I think we blend things maybe better than some folks. Obviously, when you manage a forest, and we have very qualified foresters and consulting foresters out there that do a great job of managing forests, but often we want to tweak with it some of the wildlife habitat principles and management schemes that can both have us do a better job of managing our forest and also mesh in the management of our wildlife resources at the same time. And we do that by using sound science and a lot of background and research. There's been many years of research done on rough grouse and woodcock habitat and those things that affect it, and that often is forest management practices. So we were there at the forefront trying to take that message forward and, again, blend it with those who know and practice good sound silviculture and forest management on the ground.
When RGS uses the term healthy forests, it's something we've talked a lot about over the last few years. To have a healthy forest, it includes various age classes of the forest to benefit, you know, wildlife, to create habitat, and to serve some other purposes. Is that right? And if so, from your perspective, describe what an ideal healthy forest is to support grouse populations.
Sure. And healthy forest is really a very broad term, but we want to be able to say that we have a good, sound, diverse forest that provides a lot of opportunities and a lot of protection from insect and disease development, and really just one monoculture out there, and that could be a plantation-type forestry, or that could be just letting things go and not touching them. To me, a healthy forest mixes that blend. We often say we need areas of young, old, and ages in between forests. We need big forest, small forest, and sizes in between. We need that whole mixture out there and blended together to have all the pieces needed, both from the forest and from the wildlife aspect, to meet the needs of those species. And you can look at some of the, we hopefully will get to that later, but some of the interesting needs of even just two species like ruffed grouse and woodcock that we emphasize. It isn't just one thing they need. They often need several things. And a good, healthy forest provides that mix that can provide the different ages and different structure that are needed for the different wildlife species that utilize it.
Let's get into that, if we can, and talk specifically maybe grouse and woodcock habitat. In your region, in Wisconsin there, and a little bit of Michigan, when you're planning some forest management, what's your game plan to affect that, to manage that, to create the ideal grouse habitat?
Matt, for the most part, for ruffed grouse and woodcock, we are looking at thick, dense, young forest. The stem density that's needed for protection of these species during most of their lifetime is thick enough so they can hide from predators and feel comfortable and secure. They're not a species that does well in the open, more mature forest. There are other species that do well in those habitats, but the ruffed grouse and woodcock definitely do not. So we need to have always present in an area some level of very young forest habitat. In the northern parts of their range, especially in the upper Great Lakes states, a lot of that is aspen birch forests. Those forests that are short-lived, or they call them, often called early successional forests, they were the pioneers. Whenever there's a disturbance of any sort, those that come back are these early first forests in the Midwest, those forests that returned after the heavy deforestation back in the late 1800s and early 1900s and the follow-up massive wildfires back then were the pioneer species like aspen and paper birch. And those type of habitats are out there. They can produce thick, lots of stems on the ground, lots of good cover and hiding places for the birds most of the time. Yet a ruffed grouse needs a variety of ages, especially of aspen in particular, to complete its whole life cycle. So how we manage for that is looking at blocks, units where we have two or three different ages of aspen so that we constantly can have at least a portion of that landscape in a very young forest condition where they hide, but also have a little bit older age class out there. One, for your future areas for managing so you have young forest habitat, and for providing a need like trees for budding in the winter. This is a species that survives our winters by being very adaptive to the Northwoods and the northern winters. It likes deep snow. It doesn't mind cold weather as long as there's deep snow to roost in. It dives right into the snow and roots. One other adaptation that it has is that it eats buds. When the snow is covering the ground with 2 and 3 feet of snow, which happens a lot in our northern forest, the food source for these birds is available up there in the tops of the trees, in particular the aspen trees and also things like black cherry and others that are also younger forest species and species that like sunlight and need sunlight to regenerate. So a nice mixture of habitats is really the key, allowing for all these conditions and then laying it out over time so that it's not just we can make the best habitat today, but We aren't worried about it 20 years down the line. We prefer to see a plan on a property and being managed towards that plan so that we always have a good level of all the needs out there for this species.
The habitat that the Ruffed Grouse Society creates benefits both grouse and woodcock. Are there any differences in what each bird requires?
Probably the biggest difference for woodcock is that they have a lot of needs, but they are not real excited about using any older habitats. They pretty much stick in very brushy, young forest habitats, and probably even the bigger key for woodcock is it's always associated with moist soil conditions. The woodcock have a large beak that is used for probing into soft soils to pick up earthworms and other insects that are in those soils. That's how they feed. So they need the thick cover, but they need it in an area where you have moist soil condition. And you mix that in, another need that woodcock have that ruff grouse really don't have is they spend a lot of time during the evenings roosting in fallow grasslands. So they will fly to small 3 to 5 acre grasslands or even sedge nettles or any type of open area for nighttime roosting. And then go back for the day and do a lot of feeding and roosting during the day in these thick, dense cover of young aspen or alder. So you got to blend a lot of that. Their blend and mix differs from ruff grouse. Ruff grouse is pretty much trees all the time, except for maybe the brood rearing season when the chicks are feeding in little grassy openings on insects. But for woodcock, you blend in a very young forest and mix in the needs that has to be near wetlands, and they also have someplace in the local area some good natural nighttime roost areas, which are open fields and grasslands.
Moving on a little bit to ways that RGS specifically creates habitat. A few years back, RGS developed a funding mechanism called the Drummer Fund. Can you explain the Drummer Fund and how it works and how that helps create habitat for the birds?
Sure, Matt. The Drummer Fund actually is an offshoot for something we've done since the 80s. We used to call it the Management Area Program, but that was almost a nationwide program where we were funding projects all across the nation for ruff grouse and woodcock. What we did about 4 years ago, that each state has a Drummer Fund now. Proceeds from every banquet and any other event, often donations, are tossed into one single account, and that account is that state's Drummer Fund. And then we solicit projects that are going to do habitat work for ruff grouse or woodcock and utilize those funds on an annual basis to get that work done. And this program has been very popular. It is growing. The chapters are aware of that their money is going right into habitat work in their state, or it could go into a state of their choice to work on a project in their area. And a good example of that in my region is one of the chapters out of Chicago, the T. Stanton Armor chapter, does not really have much going on for grouse or woodcock habitat in the state of Illinois, but their members are often spend a lot of time north into Wisconsin, the UP of Michigan, and even a few into Minnesota. They choose to use those funds to help out with projects in those states for grouse and woodcock habitat. So it's pretty flexible, but it does give the local chapters more ownership in these programs, and I think it's been very popular because of that.
Does the Drummer Fund sometimes also help when you're maybe creating relationships with other agencies, looking for matching funds for other projects? Does that benefit those specific situations? Do you create even more funding and create even more habitat?
It definitely does. And I think another side piece of it is that we have done this now several years, and agencies are aware of these funds out there and are coming and are planning projects ahead of time. It isn't just a snap your finger, here we need a project next week. Now it's we already have projects being lined up for next year that haven't even asked for the money yet, but they're putting together projects. And a lot of these projects are doing just like you said, we're able to double and triple the amount of projects that get done, the cost of the projects, by matching with other entities out there. And we have a ranking and an evaluation system for these projects, and that high on that ranking list is the ability for these chapters to match funds to expand that work and get more done with less money from the Rough Grouse Society. I can give you an example. We just announced in Wisconsin earlier this year, the 2014 Wisconsin Drummer Fund program. We're putting and allocating over $62,000 worth of funds for 16 projects on public land for rough grouse and woodcock, but the total cost of those projects is over $250,000. So a small piece of money, $62,000 isn't that small, but it's getting a lot more done because of our ability to match and find other donors and things like that to help us with these projects.
I think that's really remarkable. I mean, the dedication of our chapters and members and the things they do for the habitat, for the birds, and for the organization really is getting recognized and creating more opportunities than just, you know, maybe simple drummer fund project they could do. It's really expanding the opportunities to bigger and better things and creating more habitat for the birds, which is always a great thing. Gary, that's about all the time we have today. I know there's a lot of stuff to talk. We could talk about this habitat all day, and we can save that for another podcast. I do want to ask you one more question, though, regarding hunting, just to help folks out with hunting from your experience. I know you've been doing that for a long time, and I'm not going to ask you for your specific spots over there in Wisconsin, but if I was Gary Zimmer and I was driving down a forest trail looking for some good grouse hunting habitat, what would you be looking for?
First of all, I'd be looking for areas I can't see through. And I kind of, my own personal rule of thumb for good grouse and woodcock habitat is if I can stand there and see in more than 50 feet into that cover, it's probably not good habitat. So I'm looking for thick, dense cover, places to hide in. Then I'm going to mix in some things like the close proximity to wetlands, in particular for woodcock habitat. A couple of things I do, you could talk on this for quite a while, is I go to some of these satellite mapping programs that are out there, or abilities like Google Earth to go in on a computer, look from the air at some habitats maybe that I already know about and see what they look like, and pretty soon you can pick out good potential habitats that you may want to check out in the future. And that's one of the tools I use. Another one I use is going to public land agencies and talking to some of the field managers about some of the areas that they know, some of the history behind them. Obviously, when you're looking at a species that utilizes young forest habitat, in most cases, that habitat is formed by good sound forestry practices. And they are coordinated by those land managers.
Now, if anybody has questions on habitat-related issues or wants to get involved more with the Rough Grouse Society, what's the best way for them to do that? Who should they contact?
They can contact any one of the regional biologists. Probably the easiest way is just to go on to the roughgrousesociety.org website, click on off of that website on the folks and how to contact us. Our phone numbers, our email addresses are on the website. Those who are folks who are members can also see information, get a lot of good information from the RGS magazine, and contact us through the society that way.
Great stuff, Gary. As always, thanks for your time and keep up the good work. We'll talk soon.
Take care, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Drummer Podcast from the Ruffed Grouse Society in association with the American Woodcock Society. Find out more at ruffedgrousesociety.org.